You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Unions representing Homeland Security employees are filing a lawsuit against the department. Collective bargaining rights within the DHS have been narrowed, and new regulations require employees to take concerns to an internal board appointed by the Secretary of Homeland Security. Mark Roth, General Counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, says the lack of due process will give management free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions. The AFGE, along with the Treasury Employees Union, the Federation of Federal Employees, and the Association of Agriculture Employees, are suing on the argument that the DHS is violating a law within the Homeland Security Act that calls for meaningful collective bargaining within the department.
As the AFL-CIO wrestles with several reform proposals triggered by the SEIU's plan to radically reorganize labor, the Communications Workers of America says what's needed is more grassroots union democracy and militancy. The CWA's Steve Early says merging of labor's bureaucratic structures alone just won't do it when it comes to revitalizing labor.
The thing that we need to not lose sight of here is that simply merging existing union structures is not going to lead to any great resurgence of labor in this country. We need to democratize existing unions. We need to involve members much greater than they are involved right now in their own unions. We need to strengthen the role of shop stewards. We need to strengthen the role of unions as effective workplace organizations.
Early says it's still possible that the SEIU and others may choose to bolt from the AFL-CIO if the reforms aren't adopted in the next few months, but that has happened before and labor has survived. Early says maintaining local union democracy and fully engaging members at the grassroots level is the key to advancing the labor movement.
All Danish trade union pension funds have decided to sell their shares of retail giant Walmart. The country's commerce unions have been petitioning the pension funds to drop the stock due to criticism of the company's management methods. In a statement, the union says European employers have begun using the management style of Walmart as a reason to get rid of regulations and collective agreement provisions. Sven Sorensen, president of the Danish Pension Fund for Handicraft and Manufacturing Trades, says there was no alternative but to drop the company because of its bad reputation and anti-human corporate philosophy. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Multinational Monitor released its top 10 worst corporations of 2004 last month. One company that made the list? Coca-Cola. According to the Monitor, workers at a Coke bottling plant in Colombia have been terrorized for years by right-wing paramilitary forces. The New York City Council sent a fact-finding mission to the plant and found 179 human rights violations against Coca-Cola workers. The company has refused requests for an independent investigation into the allegations.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Let's take another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. Poor Lloyd Blankfein. He's the chief operating officer at the Wall Street giant Goldman Sachs, but it's reported that he made, quote, only $600,000 in salary last year. That's truly sad, but before you send a check to the Blankfein Relief Fund, note that at the end of the year, Goldman Sachs put a little something extra in Lloyd's stocking, a bonus of $20 million. He's but one of the top Wall Streeters who danced into this new year with a total of $15.9 billion in executive bonuses. While wages of America's highly productive workers are being held beneath the rate of inflation by the corporate elite, these Wall Street darlings are porking up, with top investment bankers hiking their annual bonuses by some 15% over the previous year's haul. You'll be delighted to know that this showering of corporate largesse on themselves has led to America's highly productive workers are being held beneath the rate of inflation by the corporate elite. These Wall Street darlings are porking up, with top investment bankers hiking their annual bonuses by some 15% over the previous year's haul. You'll be delighted to know that this showering of corporate largesse on themselves has led the fortunate bankers to, quote, rediscover conspicuous consumption, in the words of one news report. Manhattan's dealers in luxury goods are experiencing a surge of giddy impulse buyers. $6 million apartments on Manhattan's Tony Upper East Side are suddenly in demand, as are such show-off cars as the Maybach, an exclusive line of Mercedes-Benz autos with sticker prices starting at $315,000. There is a sense of entitlement among those wallowing in this windfall. After all, they say, we work hard. Of course, migrant farm workers work hard too, but, oh well, never mind. Even the super-rich bankers who try to be what they think of as modest are lost in this culture of excess. As one
Charles, so what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, elections, elections, elections. Iraq, Washington. Well, elections, elections, elections. Iraq, Washington State, the Democratic leadership, Ohio. The news is just full of elections today. We'll cover some of this stuff in our first hour. In our second hour, we're going to get into the question of if our elected representatives don't quickly wake up, we'll soon be in a feudal war. A feudal war, yes. In fact, we're going to hear from the ghost of Frank Zappa in our second hour. An old clip from him on Crossfire years and years ago. And in our third hour, a whole bunch of other news, how did Democrats gain in hidden elections? And some interesting correspondence discussion about mouse tracks are over here by the window, next to the studio. So I'm not sure if Thomas Jefferson has been out on top of the snow here, but his relatives no doubt have been out. And there's another interesting set of tracks over on the other side. There's a window on both sides of me here in the studio. And the one over on my left, there are tracks that last year we had a fox that was running through here periodically. And there's a groundhog that, or hedgehog or whatever they're called, that lives right up on the hillside about 10 feet from here, 20 feet from here. And one or the other was around all the time. And the fox, a great big huge red tail, just a huge fox. And I'm guessing that these prints are either our fox's back or something close to him. I don't think that they're dog prints. I haven't seen a dog around here in a long, long time. So we tend to have more like foxes and things. Anyhow, more than you wanted to know. Let's get to the news here, folks. First of all, with regard to the Democratic Party, it looks like the anti-Dean forces are marshaling themselves. They are getting their act together, trying to. This, in my opinion, could be the thing that could mean another 4 years of disaster for the Democratic Party. Those who listen to the program, you know, I believe that Howard Dean is the right man for the job. I think that he would make a remarkable leader, chairman for the Democratic Party, and could take the Democratic Party back to its classic traditional democratic roots. That is the party of, by, and for we the people, as it was intended when Thomas Jefferson founded it back in the 1790s. Called it back then the Democratic Republican Party, which is the excuse that the Bush administration has been using this is absolutely incredible. Believe it or not, Thomas Jefferson founded the Democratic Republican Party, which in the late 1820s stopped using the word Republican. It was becoming kind of a dirty word. I think it was during the Andrew Jackson administration. And so then, of course, 20 years later, a generation later, when the Whig Party imploded, there were folks, they wanted to start a new political party. And so they said, well, nobody's using the word Republican. Let's use that. And that, of course, is when the modern day Republican Party started in the 1850s. In fact, its first convention was in Jackson, Michigan. And of course, their first major candidate for office was Abraham Lincoln, their first, presidential candidate. Although they'd been around for a few years before that, but not much. So the WhiteHouse.gov website, where kids from all over America go to get their information about the presidents, go to WhiteHouse.gov and click on history. And actually, before you go to WhiteHouse.gov, you need to go to WhiteHouse.org to get the real story on what's going on in the White House. But setting that aside for a moment, go to WhiteHouse.gov, the official website. Click on history. And then click on presidents. And you'll see a listing of all the presidents. Click on, now they've got them organized by name because they want John Adams to be up at the top because he's, he was a president whose son became president. He was a right winger. He passed a law throwing people in jail who didn't agree with him. He tried to whip the nation into a war frenzy King Jerry the cat just walked. A great big feral cat just walked by the window. So that's why Thomas Jefferson is hiding out. Anyhow, so John Adams is at the top of the list. Change the list so that you are reading it chronologically. And just look at Jefferson. Now, in the biography of Jefferson, they actually say that he started the Democratic-Republican Party, but then they refer to him as a Republican. And then read the biography of James Madison, read the biography of James Monroe, who followed him, and even Andrew Jackson, who followed him. According to the White House, they were all Republicans. It's really quite remarkable. They've changed parties! The Republican Party didn't, of course, exist back then, but don't tell that to George Bush. He'd get confused. So, as Carolyn Kay notes with MakeThemAccountable.com, she says, it's crisis time for the Democratic Party, friends! Party leaders think they know better than you or I who the chairman of the DNC should be. These leaders are so addicted to corporate money that they will slap us in the face again and reject Howard Dean. And she talks about join the No Dean, No Green campaign. Never again contribute. Pledge to never again contribute to the Democratic Party if they reject Howard Dean again this time. And she's got a link for that. You can find that at MakeThemAccountable.com. And she references this Associated Press story. A group of state party leaders slowed Howard Dean's fast-moving campaign to become Democratic Party chairman by backing rival candidate Donnie Fowler. The Executive Committee of State Party Chairs voted Sunday to endorse the 37-year-old Fowler, who headed Senator John Kerry's successful presidential nominating campaign in Michigan last year. He's the son of a former Democratic National Committee chairman, Donald Fowler, from South Carolina. Same qualifications as George W. Son of the guy who did the job before. I don't want to put him down. I'm sure Donnie Fowler's a great guy, especially if he organized Kerry's campaign in Michigan, which was successful. The executive committee, I just think that Howard Dean is the guy we need. The executive committee's nod for Fowler was to be submitted Monday in a conference call involving all state Democratic chairs. Fowler reportedly gained ground on a secret vote by the committee to put him ahead of Dean. So news from that should be coming in shortly. In the meantime, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, the Republicans are keeping this story alive. It's vote fraud, say the Republicans. The guy who was elected actually isn't the guy who won. Or something to that effect. Actually is a woman. The person who has been inaugurated is not the person that the voters really wanted. That's what the Republicans are saying. And we should re-vote. And we should investigate this thoroughly. No, they're not talking about Ohio. In Ohio, the Republicans blocked the efforts to investigate. They rigged the recount. They had their computer guys come in and reset the machines, had printouts taped to the wall of what the count was supposed to be, and then they programmed the machine. And lo and behold, the machine said the same as the count. And then when Cliff Arnebeck and these guys tried to, the Alliance for Democracy folks and the Greens, tried to sue the Secretary of State Ken Blackwell, the guy who wants to be governor of Ohio, this Republican sleazoid who was Secretary of State and head of the Bush campaign. And I call him a sleazoid with careful consideration. I'm not prone to name calling, but the behavior of this guy is absolutely extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, you say, I need not recount the list here. It's old territory. But anyhow, the Republicans are saying, no, we don't want to look at what happened in Ohio. We don't want to look at what happened in Florida. No, you can't do that. Remember Bev Harris fighting with the elections official over a garbage bag full of receipts from the electronic voting machines that they were going to throw in the trash? And the bag splits open. We don't want you to know about that. But in Washington State, we're going to, well, what they're going to do is challenge, there's going to be this drumbeat questioning the legitimacy of the governor there. In the meantime, prominent statisticians in the United States have taken a look at the Mitofsky numbers, the Mitofsky-Edison numbers, the exit polls. The big question is, why is it that the exit polls showed Kerry leading by 3%? By about 5 million votes. And yet, the computerized voting machines tell us that Bush won by 2.5% by about 3 million votes. Why is that? Well, in USA Today a week ago, Mitofsky Edison was reported as saying the reason was because they had hired young people who were, and Republicans were less willing to talk to them. Turns out, when you look at their actual numbers, the Republicans were more willing to talk to poll workers than the Democrats were. Interesting. So, you know, so here now we've got a group of prominent statisticians who here's their headline. Prominent statisticians refute explanation of 2004 U.S. poll discrepancies in new Edison-Mitofsky report and urge investigation of U.S. presidential results. These are folks from the University of Wisconsin, University of Utah, Cornell University, University of Pennsylvania, Notre Dame, Southern Methodist University, Case Western Reserve, Temple University. They looked through this stuff, and they said, no, these exit polls, the information in these exit polls, if you interpret it correctly, indicates that there may well have been substantial fraud. My phrase, not theirs. They use the language of analysts, but that's the bottom line here. Interesting. 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Mott Vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and
strongholds. And now here's where it gets really interesting. The statisticians go on, quoting again from their news release. This is these scientists with like a half a dozen or a dozen different universities. Major, you know, heavy hitters, and this is not a bunch of partisan hacks, and this isn't any political party. This is a scientific group that analyzes elections. The statistics go on to note, this, by the way, their website, uscountvotes.org, uscountvotes.org is their website. The statisticians go on to note that precincts with hand-counted paper ballots showed no statistical discrepancy between the exit polls and the official results. You get that? In those areas where the ballots are counted by hand, the exit polls were accurate. But for other voting technologies, the overall discrepancy was far larger than the poll's margin of error. They go on to say the pollsters at Edison Mitofsky agreed that their 2004 exit poll, for whatever reasons, had the poorest accuracy in at least 20 years. End quote. Now, let's move from there. So, are we going to find out what happened? You know, are the Republicans going to find out what happened in Washington State? They'll probably get to the bottom of it. They have a lot of money and a lot of energy and a huge machine. Are the Democrats going to get to the bottom of what happened in Florida and in Ohio and in the 8 or 9 other states where the exit polls showed Kerry having huge leads and the electronic voting machines said no, he didn't? Well, I suspect we'll find out. I suspect, you know, just like we found out, BBC reported 3 months after the election of 2000 that 70, 80, 90,000 people had been illegally thrown off the voting rolls in Florida, African Americans, by Kathleen Harris and Jeb Bush in a criminal act that threw the election to Jeb Bush's brother, George. But it took us here in the United States, it took us almost a year to learn that, you know, to be widely known. The BBC report, everybody in Europe knew it. The BBC report never played in the United States and was not reported on by a single national news outlet. Okay, so it took us a while. It took us almost a year. It was November 12th, 2001. You know, a month and a day after 9/11, that the Washington Post and the New York Times published front page stories pointing out that Al Gore actually got more votes in Florida, no matter what standard was used. To quote the New York Times, no matter what standard was used, end quote, that you know Gore actually won Florida. So it took us a year to figure it out. I'm suspecting it'll probably take us a year this time too, before we get you know what actually happened. What about the Iraqis? Well, here we have now in Iraq, we have a great victory for Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Husseini al-Sistani. This is the guy who really carried the day. You will recall when we first went over there, when we first invaded Iraq and Bremer came in and he said, okay, we're going to set up an Iraqi government. And they said, oh, cool. What kind of government? And they were actually even holding their own elections. Remember Sadr was holding elections? They held elections in 30, 40 different areas, and there was one town, one community where Bremer came in and said, we're going to put your guy in, and they had held an election. They had an elected official, and the people rose up and said no, and Bremer backed down and said, okay, you can have your guy. He's now our guy. Well, Bremer was going to have caucuses with hand-picked people picking who would be the hand-picked people who would be the government, and Sistani said, no, you are going to have direct elections. And they forced direct elections on the United States. And it happened this last weekend. A great day for the Ayatollah, the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Unions representing Homeland Security employees are filing a lawsuit against the department. Collective bargaining rights within the DHS have been narrowed, and new regulations require employees to take concerns to an internal board appointed by the Secretary of Homeland Security. Mark Roth, General Counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, says the lack of due process will give management free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions. The AFGE, along with the Treasury Employees Union, the Federation of Federal Employees, and the Association of Agriculture Employees, are suing on the argument that the DHS is violating a law within the Homeland Security Act that calls for meaningful collective bargaining within the department.
As the AFL-CIO wrestles with several reform proposals triggered by the SEIU's plan to radically reorganize labor, the Communications Workers of America says what's needed is more grassroots union democracy and militancy. The CWA's Steve Early says merging of labor's bureaucratic structures alone just won't do it when it comes to revitalizing labor.
The thing that we need to not lose sight of here is that simply merging existing union structures is not going to lead to any great resurgence of labor. In this country. We need to strengthen the role of shop stewards. We need to strengthen the role of unions as effective workplace organizations.
Early says it's still possible that the SEIU and others may choose to bolt from the AFL-CIO if the reforms aren't adopted in the next few months, but that has happened before and labor has survived. Early says maintaining local union democracy and fully engaging members at the grassroots level is the key to advancing the labor movement.
All Danish trade union pension funds have decided to sell their shares of retail giant Walmart. The country's commerce unions have been petitioning the pension funds to drop the stock due to criticism of the company's management methods.
And local union democracy and fully engaging members at the grassroots level is the key to advancing the labor movement.
All Danish trade union pension funds have decided to sell their shares of retail giant Walmart. The country's commerce unions have been petitioning the pension funds to drop the stock due to criticism of the company's management methods. In a statement, the union says European employers have begun using the management style of Walmart as a reason to get rid of regulations and collective agreement provisions. Sven Sorensen, president of the Danish Pension Fund for Handicraft and Manufacturing Trades, says there was no corporations of 2004 last month. One company that made the list? Coca-Cola. According to the Monitor, workers at a Coke bottling plant in Colombia have been terrorized for years by right-wing paramilitary forces. The New York City Council sent a fact-finding mission to the plant and found 179 human rights violations against Coca-Cola workers. The company has refused requests for an independent investigation into the allegations.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Bush administration said that in the Ukraine, it looked like there was vote fraud. Let's have another election. They did, and apparently the right guy won. And, of course, the situation in Iraq, you think it's a good thing they had elections. I guess I do, too. I don't see how you can really have a total fair and free election with foreign troops occupying the country, but I guess we could leave that debate for another day. And then, of course, you mentioned the Washington election. Of course, you know, the Republicans really hated it when the results were litigated in Florida in 2000. Nobody could even talk about the exit polls being so much at variance with the actual vote totals per the electronic voting machines. But yet in Washington, where the Democratic candidate has been sworn in as governor, the Republicans haven't given up. And I don't know whether you caught Capitol Gang Saturday night at all.
I didn't.
Well, Cato Byrne was on there, and she said, you know, nobody knows who really won. In all fairness, we ought to have another election in Washington. And I was waiting for, you're chuckling. So
and why isn't Al Hunt saying, and Ohio?
This is the point. Why didn't Al Hunt or Mark Hughes wasn't there, but why didn't Al Hunt or Margaret Carlson say, you mean like maybe we should have had a re-election in that one county where everybody got fouled up by the butterfly ballot? Not a word.
Yeah.
And this is the problem, I think you'd agree with me, Tom, is that far from the Democrats being such poor losers and such obstructionists, I think they're laying down for the Republicans. They make a little bit of noise, just like they made a little bit of noise about Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you, Rick. And this is the reason why so many people who voted Democratic, which is not most I started to say this is the reason why so many Democrats, but it would be incorrect to say that, because probably the majority of people who voted for John Kerry were not registered as Democrats. Both parties have a minority of registration among all the people who vote.
Right.
But the people who voted Democratic this time, many of them, particularly those who are not diehard party members, would probably never again vote for John Kerry and may not even again vote Democratic unless the Democratic Party really changes things by, for example, putting Howard Dean in charge of it, because this party has been the party of roll over and go along.
Well, yeah, that's the way I saw it, like in 2000, for instance. I had a problem, and I won't get into it with all the conspiracy theories about Skull and Bones, but I think it's pretty well known that both candidates were members of that society, whereas Gore in 2000 was not. He was a sitting vice president. He'd been there for 8 years, and I had a lot more enthusiasm voting for Gore in 2000 than I did for Kerry in 2004.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, Gore actually fought.
Yeah, and Kerry didn't.
Kerry conceded the next day.
I know. It's beyond the pale, Rick. It's just beyond the pale. I'm over it with Kerry in that regard. You know, nice guy, good campaign. I voted for him. I encouraged others to vote for him, and you know, enough. It's time for him to move on, as they say. But and Al Gore would have made a great president. Unfortunately, he had Joe Lieberman as his vice presidential candidate, who turns out now we're discovering the next Zell Miller is going to be Joe Lieberman. Patrick in Tuscaloosa, Alabama on the line. Hey, Patrick, what's on your mind?
Hey, what's up? I wanted to talk about this election. You can say they're free and fair, but...
Which election are you talking about now, Patrick?
I'm sorry, a whole bunch of them
on the table here.
Yeah, I know. Our elections and Iraqi elections, we get them confused, I guess. But in Iraq, though,
right.
40 people dead.
Yeah, well,
during the elections. I mean, if we had elections in America and a bomb went off killing 40 people at a poll, would we be sitting around talking about, oh, well, more than 65% of the people voted, it's a wonderful day for democracy?
Well, yeah, I frankly, Patrick, I think... Not to minimize the death of 40 people, but I think that only 40 people dead is not bad given what's been going on in Iraq. Here, the problem that I have, and
they're not us. I mean, these are people, though. These are people who are going to decide.
You know, we
they
lost
basic anarchy with no security. How are they going to have a democracy with no government, with no constitution, and no military? They don't even have sovereignty.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And the point of the election is to try and give them that. The argument that many of the folks, particularly the Sunnis, have against the elections was that we wrote the rules. We specified who could be a candidate. And
exactly.
and not only did we specify who could be a candidate, but we said that there will be we created this thing called the Independent Iraq Electoral Commission. It was appointed by Paul Bremer, all of its members. They have absolute power. They can bar any candidate, and they meet in private, and they don't have to tell who was barred or why. In other words, they had the absolute power to forbid anybody from being on that list. So a lot of folks in Iraq are very concerned about that. Secondly, once you get on the list, in order to stay on the list, you have to swear allegiance to Bremer's law,
right,
to the Constitution.
Right.
And oddly, one of the few things that we know about the legal basis for limiting somebody from this list is moral turpitude. Okay, that's one of the things you can't have. So, and yet you've got Chalabi, who's been convicted in absentia, our guy Chalabi, for bank fraud in Jordan, 20 some odd years at hard labor, and you got Alawi, Ayad Alawi, who is now, you know, our prime minister there.
He's just as bad as Saddam.
When he worked for the CIA in Iraq, he blew up a school bus, he blew up a theater, you know, during Saddam's rule. I mean, he wasn't one of the good guys, or maybe he was. I mean, it depends on which side you're looking at from, but he wasn't unwilling to kill people, let's say.
One guy's devil is our guy's angel, I guess.
Yeah.
But let me say this. Anyone who says this was a free and democratic election, that is BS. I'm sorry. Because there was voter intimidation against the minorities. Minorities were not able to vote in the Sunni area. And the Sunnis have said that if they do not have a good representation and the Shia have a majority, they will take up arms.
Yeah,
this
no,
is not the end.
Patrick,
it's the end of a chapter.
Patrick, I'm agreeing with you, and I think that we are getting closer to civil war. And at the same time, I think that you have to cut, as much as it pains me to say it, cut the Bush administration a little slack in this regard, in as much as it's not in their interest, it's not in our interest, it's not in America's interest, it's not in the Bush administration's interest, it's not in George, in the Republican reelection interest for the Sunnis to be disenfranchised. They would like the Sunnis to have participated. I'm guessing that we did pretty much everything we could to get the Sunnis to participate.
No, we didn't.
They just saw the handwriting on the wall.
Didn't do negotiations.
No, here's
done that. We could have done so many things. This was just put together out of the ass, saying, "Okay, these are free and democratic."
Yeah, this
you
is.
You can't cut somebody slack for screwing up what they started.
Yeah, that's the larger point, Patrick, and you make it well, and I appreciate it. But the larger point is that we should have known, number one, before we went in there, that we would encounter the kind of insurgency that we have. And we did, by the way. The entire world was telling us this. What we're seeing come to pass is just exactly what everybody except the neocons was predicting, and which is why Bremer didn't want to have elections. And we should have known that when we finally said, "Okay, Sistani, we have insurgency that we have," and we did, by the way. The entire world was telling us this. What we're seeing come to pass is just exactly what everybody except the neocons was predicting, and which is why Bremer didn't want to have elections. And we should have known that when we finally said, "Okay, Sistani, we will go along with you. We will do what you're demanding. We will hold the elections," knowing that the majority of the country is Shia, that the Sunnis are going to freak out. And not just the Sunnis in Iraq. Keep in mind that, you know, you've got Sunni leadership in Syria. But other than that, I mean, Saudi Arabia, we will hold the elections, knowing that the majority of the country is Shia, that the Sunnis are going to freak out. And not just the Sunnis in Iraq. Keep in mind that, you know, you've got Sunni leadership in Syria. But other than that, I mean, Saudi Arabia is you've got Shia leadership in Syria, and you've got Shias in Iran. But Iran is not Arab. So basically, all of the Arab countries, the majority of the Arab countries, I think there's three now that are Shia. But the majority of the Arab nations are run by Sunnis. And they are quite nervous about. I mean, this is a conflict that goes back to when Muhammad died, and his son.
It's going to be close in both elections. We know now that Al Gore won. After the fact, in 2000, and yeah, I think people are much more passionate today about that than they are about John Kerry losing.
Yeah.
But
please don't create political parties. He called them factions. They called them factions back then. He says, please don't create political parties. Because if you do, and there are more than two of them, you're going to end up with minority rule, which is not democracy. Democracy, you know, in a republic, the republic part of it is protect the minorities. The democracy part of it is the majorities has, you know, their will as long as the rights of the minorities are respected. And Madison was very concerned that if you had three, four, five factions, that somebody could be elected president, somebody could be elected senator, whatever. On 15, 20, 30% of the vote as a minority candidate. And he was right. And but the problem was that none of them back then in 1787 could figure out what to do about it. And it wasn't until 1861 when John Stuart Mill wrote I forget the name of the paper that he wrote. It was right after he published On Liberty. And he wrote this little booklet, this little 30-some-odd page booklet, in which he laid out the idea of proportional representation, which is, by the way, what we're doing in Iraq. And that is where if a party... Yeah, but and this, of course, won't happen for another year, because what we're doing right now is we just elected in Iraq, or the Iraqis just elected the folks who are going to write the constitution that's going to then execute this process. But they're going to have proportional representation, which means if a party gets say, 20% of the vote, they get 20% of the seats. If a party gets 3% of the vote, they get 3% of the seats in the parliament. If they get 80% of the vote, they get 80% of the seats. And so even a minority candidate will have a voice. And we don't have that here in the United States.
No,
the United States, New Zealand, Australia, and Greece are essentially the only countries in the world that don't have that. And New Zealand and Australia fixed the problem 15 years ago or so. I'm not sure when New Zealand did. It might have been before that. But Australia, it was about 15 years ago. They fixed the problem by putting into place what we here in the United States call instant runoff voting. And I think they call it preferential voting in Australia or something like that, at where you can pick from a list of candidates, and then whoever is at the bottom of the list gets eliminated. You know, if there's not a majority, if there's only a plurality,
right,
whoever's at the bottom of the list gets eliminated, and an instant recount takes place. And that way, you could vote as your first choice for Ralph Nader, your second choice for Al Gore or John Kerry, let's say. And then if Nader didn't get the votes, boom, it would roll over into the next person. So you don't throw your vote away.
Yeah.
And we now have almost 300 communities in the United States that have this IRV, and we need to move to it nationwide. We need to do it right away. Steve, I appreciate the call. Thanks for being with us today. And we will be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People states. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and www.healin-holler.com.
America's most famous naturalist compromised his broad view of wilderness to obtain a narrow set of goals, according to a Kansas historian. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. John Muir has been called a wilderness prophet, but historian Donald Worster says the naturalist's fight to save places like Yosemite diverted his passion for all wilderness into protecting select natural wonders.
It narrowed and focused on the national parks as the place to go find nature, and particularly the greatest, most beautiful places like the Grand Canyon, Yosemite, Yellowstone. Increasingly, those became, for him, nature. And what lay outside those places was less and less interesting to him.
Worcester is an environmental historian at the University of Kansas. He says rich, influential friends, people like Teddy Roosevelt and railroad tycoon Edward Harriman, helped Muir save Yosemite, but he says they also compromised the Scottish immigrants' ideals.
In a way, he became compromised by the wonderful linen sheets that he liked to sleep on in these people's houses, the little boutonniere they brought him in the morning. He became their kind of pet. And they would trot John Muir out and say, now tell us some wonderful stories about dogs and birds in your Scottish brogue. And he would light up and do what he was supposed to do.
Muir eventually helped create the National Park Service and founded the Sierra Club, but Worcester says Muir seemed blind to the world outside the parks.
He would rail against greedy people trying to destroy Yosemite National Park. But he didn't really connect that up to the economic system, and it was driving environmental change, much of it very destructive, across the entire continent.
In spite of his shortcomings, Muir's legacy is seen by millions of people who visit the national parks each year. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, even the brightest star won't shine forever.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, or 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS, and democraticmatch.com. For singles interested in finding others of all varieties. Welcome back. Sistani made it a religious duty to vote. He said, you know, if you're gonna be a good Shia, you're gonna be a good Muslim, you must vote. And he basically created this election. And I think it's interesting. You see, there was a news conference that Bush held with Berlusconi, in which he said, we will continue to make it clear to both Syria and Iran. Now, see, Syria and Iran are both Shia-controlled. As far as I believe they're the only two. I'm not sure about Lebanon. I think that they're the only two that are Shia-controlled. We will continue to make it clear to both Syria and Iran that, as with other nations, as will other nations in our coalition, the meddling in the internal affairs of Iraq is not in their interest. We expect people to work with the Iraqi interim government to enforce the border, stop flow of people and money that aim to help these terrorists. Was he warning them about helping terrorists? Actually, in all probability, no. In all probability, really what he was flipped out about was that they were sending money in to Sistani. That the guy who's on the top of his list was headquartered in Tehran all the years that Saddam was running Iraq. He's the former leader of the military wing of SCIRI. And you've got a similar thing with the Dawa Party. I mean, these are the two main parties, right? And both of them out of Iran. And now there's all this evidence that Ahmed Chalabi, was actually a spy for Iran all the time that he was inside the Pentagon hanging out with Wolfie and Rummy and Cheney, that he was spying for Iran and feeding them information. I mean, not just evidence, I mean, proof. And that he's now may end up being the president of Iraq. Now, the president doesn't have as much power as the prime minister, other than the fact that the president plus two other people get to choose the prime minister. Wouldn't that be an interesting irony? And when we get to the food ration cards, we'll talk about this later on in the day. This is fascinating how this thing was pulled together and some of the concerns some of the Iraqis have about it. But a step toward what? We're not sure. Is it a step toward civil war? Good chance. Is it a step toward democracy? That would be wonderful. It's Tom Hartman with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, "To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times." Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Unions representing Homeland Security employees are filing a lawsuit against the department. Collective bargaining rights within the DHS have been narrowed, and new regulations require employees to take concerns to an internal board appointed by the Secretary of Homeland Security. Mark Roth, General Counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, says the lack of due process will give management free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions. The AFGE, along with the Treasury Employees Union, the Federation of Federal Employees, and the Association of Agriculture Employees, are suing on the argument that the DHS is violating a law within the Homeland Security Act that calls for meaningful collective bargaining within the department.
As the AFL-CIO wrestles with several reform proposals triggered by the SEIU's plan to radically reorganize labor, the Communications Workers of America says what's needed is more grassroots union democracy and militancy. The CWA's Steve Early says merging of labor's bureaucratic structures alone just won't do it when it comes to revitalizing labor.
The thing that we need to not lose sight of here is that simply merging existing union structures is not going to lead to any great resurgence of labor in this country. We need to democratize existing unions. We need to involve members much greater than they are involved right now in their own unions. We need to strengthen the role of shop stewards. We need to strengthen the role of unions as effective workplace organizations.
Early says it's still possible that the SEIU and others may choose to bolt from the AFL-CIO if the reforms aren't adopted in the next few months, but that has happened before and labor has survived. Early says maintaining local union democracy and fully engaging members at the grassroots level is the key to advancing the labor movement.
All Danish trade union pension funds have decided to sell their shares of retail giant Walmart. The country's commerce unions have been petitioning the pension funds to drop the stock due to criticism of the company's management methods. In a statement, the union says European employers have begun using the management style of Walmart as a reason to get rid of regulations and collective agreement provisions. Sven Sorensen, president of the Danish Pension Fund for Handicraft and Manufacturing Trades, says there was no alternative but to drop the company because of its bad reputation and anti-human corporate philosophy. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Multinational Monitor released its top 10 worst corporations of 2004 last month. One company that made the list? Coca-Cola. According to the Monitor, workers at a Coke bottling plant in Colombia have been terrorized for years by right-wing paramilitary forces. The New York City Council sent a fact-finding mission to the plant and found 179 human rights violations against Coca-Cola workers. The company has refused requests for an independent investigation into the allegations.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Here's a message for Treasury Secretary John Snow. Yoo-hoo, Johnny. Next time you orbit anywhere near Earth, call home. This guy is farther out than Pluto. When it was announced recently that the U.S. trade deficit has set yet another record, Bush's top economic official rocketed off into deep space, claiming that, woo-woo, bad news is good news. In 2004, the American economy bought $600 billion more in products from foreign countries, especially China, than we sold to them. This is the exact opposite of a good business plan. Yet Snow, apparently snorting a noseful of intergalactic dust, proclaimed that this Grand Canyon of a trade gap, quote, reflects the fact that Americans are becoming more prosperous, thus buying more foreign products. More prosperous? Hey, Snowman, you Bushites are waving our middle-class manufacturing and high-tech jobs offshore, and American wages are not even keeping up with the cost of living, at the same time that your disastrous borrow-and-spend economic policies are sinking us into an unfathomable sea of federal debt. Just the interest on that debt now costs every American man, woman, and kid their economic policies to fit our needs. Hello, Johnny. They're our competitors. We're supposed to outdo them, not whimper at them. It's not exactly in the can-do spirit of America for our team leaders to be begging the other team to give us some points. This is Jim Hightower saying, to bridge the trade gap, our leaders must start investing again in American workers, farmers, and entrepreneurs, restoring our grassroots competitive strength.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
You know, you hear all about in the mainstream media, in the corporate media, you hear all about the latest merger. AT&T, for example, looks like it's about to go away. It's going to be gobbled up by what had been one of the baby bells. Here we're seeing, this is the last remnants of the final years of the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act back in the late 1970s during the Carter administration, which led to the breakup of AT&T into the baby bells and Lucent Technologies and all that, which actually increased shareholder value, lowered prices for consumers, And led to just an explosion of innovation. See, there's been this theory for a long, long time that one of the problems inherent in absolutely pure, unregulated capitalism is that if you have a system that's based on the assumption that the big eat the small, and that doesn't have cooperation as part of its, as one of its values. You know, unlike biological systems, there's competition, but there's also cooperation. But in laissez-faire capitalism, there's just this idea of pure competition. And ultimately, you will end up with a single company controlling an entire industry. They will just stand there like a giant, like Microsoft with operating systems for PCs. And that ultimately is, the theory goes, is not good for consumers. is not good for the marketplace. It's not good for innovation. And it prevents entrepreneurship. It prevents people from getting into the market. It prevents people from starting new businesses. It ultimately becomes a suffocating blanket in the marketplace. And so the answer to this, of course, was worked out this, you know, as the details of capitalism were developed throughout the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, and really codified in large part in the 18th and 19th century, the solution to this was to say, we're going to have some rules. There are going to be some rules to the game. There has to be something to balance that principle of pure competition. And so we've had a variety. We've experimented with a variety of different kinds of rules in the history of the United States. For the first 100 years in this nation, a corporation could not exist for more than 40 years. At the end of 40 years, it had to dissolve and be subject to the equivalent of inheritance tax. And then, you know, new people could start. You're on your own. Yes, we know we made a commitment to you. Why isn't it a big story that Homeland Security Department employees are suing the Homeland Security Department over anti-labor practices? I mean, I just, you know, why does this stuff not break through? Why is there no labor news in the mainstream media? Well, could it be? Here's another variation on this, our conservative alert for the day. Yes, indeed. It's from an article by Aaron Kelly, the Washington writer for the Burlington Free Press. Senators reignited a battle, this is last Wednesday, over how tough the nation's clean air laws should be. Conservative senators have revived President Bush's hotly debated Clear Skies Initiative to reduce power plant pollution, which causes lung and heart ailments, premature deaths, and birth defects. Advocates of the plan, favored by the utility industry, say it would reduce toxic emissions 70% by 2018. Of course, the law currently in effect says reduce them by 90%. Kelly notes, instead of forcing all power plants to clean up their pollution, the bill would encourage them to do so by allowing clean companies to sell credits to dirtier plants. Environmentalists and their allies in Congress. It's like, you know, dirty word time or something. This isn't just environmental. This is us. We're breathing this air, thank you very much. You don't have to be a member of Greenpeace. Bush's plan would weaken the Clean Air Act by allowing the dirtiest plants to continue polluting as long as they buy credits from cleaner companies. That's the bottom line. So Jim Jeffords, the former Republican, now independent from the state of Vermont, senator, has proposed a piece of legislation that would cut the amount of mercury being dumped into the air down to 5 tons a year by 2009. Now, under the Bush plan, by 2010, it would be cut down to 34 tons a year. Now, keep in mind, we're talking tons, 34 tons of mercury in the air. More than that is going in right now. Bush wants to cut it down to 34 tons by 2010. A ton is what, 2,000 pounds, more or less? A pound? So you break it down, you get down to milligrams. A milligram is a thousandth of a gram. And then you go down to micrograms, a thousandth of a milligram. We're talking little teeny tiny amounts, you know, 10, 20, 30 micrograms of mercury. It's very, very, very small amounts of mercury. Now, you've got an entire scientific community very concerned that these very tiny amounts of mercury in vaccines used as preservatives may be causing an epidemic of autism around the world. In fact, they've pulled it from many vaccines. And yet Bush says 34 tons in the air. Now, there are folks who are suggesting maybe the explosion in autism isn't from the mercury in the vaccines, it's from the mercury in the fish. How did it get in the fish? Well, it got put in the air. How did it get put in the air? Well, Bush's buddies are running these coal-fired power plants, and sure enough, it gets into the air. So Jeffords says, let's cut this down to 5 tons a year by 2009. Bush says, nah, let's get 34 tons. That's the Clean Air Act. I'm sorry, that's the Clear Skies Initiative. Clean Air Act is the actual law in place right now. So on it goes. 1-866-889-8894. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. With my oldest son and I were just talking this weekend. It seems to be coming down to the corporations. I'm going to boil it down to the ridiculous. Two or three. And if you lose one job, you've lost every job.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, if you work for Monsanto or something like this, and they own everything, paper bags and whatever it is, you've lost your, like a pharmacy. You work in a pharmacy, you now everybody owns 6 or 7 different chains in that pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
Where at one time when we were growing up, you could go from CVS to Save-On to, you know, Rite Aid to, you know, to blah, blah, blah.
Hey, when I was growing up, the pharmacies were owned by the guy down the street.
Well, yeah, that's
you know,
true, too.
The local pharmacist owned a pharmacy. The whole idea of becoming a pharmacist was to become an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Well, once you lose one job now, you're going to lose it forever.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you're going to start out again.
Oh, I see. Yeah. The jobs, in other words, when the jobs go away, they don't come back.
And when a big corporation owns it, a conglomerate owns it, you've lost it for everything.
Right. Well, the way you bring them back is you change the rules that led to this. We go back to saying we're going to start enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. We're going to break up these huge corporate behemoths so that, you know, down to reasonable sizes, so that and we're going to allow the states to actually regulate them like they used to. You know, Elliot Spitzer is just dancing around the tip of this topic. We're going to say corporations are not human beings under the Bill of Rights. They don't have human rights. They don't have personhood rights. And you're going to say that we're going to put back into place tariffs in our international trade policies to protect the workers of America. Yes, it will reduce the profitability of multinational corporations, but it will enhance the profitability of small and medium-sized locally owned corporations, American corporations, and it's going to bring back a whole lot of jobs. I mean, it is possible to reverse this. It's been done before. It started in Smoot-Hawley. It was actually done by Herbert Hoover in 1930. We've done it before.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Ed. We did it before after the disaster of the 20s and the teens, you know, the 10s before that. We can do it again. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman program, the pill that will help you escape the Matrix. Speaking of the Matrix and its main proponent, Scotty Boy McClellan, I understand Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, I understand you had what's the French phrase for that, tete-a-tete or something like that?
Well, what happened is we were sitting in the morning gaggle. That's the pen and pencil part of the briefing. There's two briefings today, one for television and radio and one for essentially just pen and pencil. And he was talking about the Democrats and their agenda, and that the president is trying to, when he went to the GOP meeting this weekend, that he was talking about his immigration program. And he said, you know, the president wants to make sure that people can come into this country under these programs for jobs that Americans don't want to do. And I said, excuse me, they're not jobs that Americans don't want to do. They're jobs that that don't pay a living wage.
Oh, boy. And his eyes got wide.
Well, it wasn't that. And he first said, what's your question? I said, well, is it that they don't want to pay a living wage? Or is it that, you know, that Americans don't want to do it? Which is it? And he said, well, essentially, that the president's message on the economy is sustain economic growth. That was his answer to me.
Yeah. See, Ellen, I suspect you're not old enough to remember Ralph Cramden, the old Jackie Gleason show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Maybe you do. Okay.
I used to watch. I'm older than you, I think. I'm 53.
No. Oh, so am I. So we're the same age.
Okay.
Boy, you sure don't look that old. I was guessing you were in your 40s. I'm early
40s. I am the knife, my friend.
Anyway, you remember Jackie Gleason's sidekick, Art Carney?
Of course.
Remember what he did for a living?
I don't, but I do remember watching the show.
He worked in the sewers of New York City. He was a sewer worker.
Okay.
Literally, worked in the sewers. He would come in those waders from time to time.
Right,
he was literally
right.
His knees in poop. And that's what Ralph Cramden did for a living. To say that there's any job that Americans won't do is absurd. People will do pretty much anything if there's a decent wage in it, and and there's reasonable protections for them. Whenever you hear cons say it's jobs Americans won't do, that's so brilliant of you, Ellen, to have said that. I am so proud of you.
Anyway, so that was this morning's encounter. Now I am actually at Eliot Spitzer's speech at the Press Club, and he is talking about how business leadership is actually pushing against all the business codes, against Sarbanes-Oxley. He talked about how the Chamber of Commerce, national, you know, the big Chamber of Commerce here, not the local ones, want the SEC's capacities, rules, ability to look at and make rules to be challenged by them, and they are now challenging it. He also said the Chamber of Congress is saying that Spitzer is going after business people for honest mistakes.
That
they're all hearkening to Alexander Hamilton and Teddy Roosevelt. He said, well, I've gone back to the speeches of those guys, and the business community hated them back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Hamilton was, you know, viewed America as an industrialist nation as opposed to an agriculturalist nation, which was Jefferson's view. But Hamilton was all in favor of regulating business. And Teddy Roosevelt was fanatic about regulating business. Fanatic about it. I mean, don't get me started.
And he also said, these people who are claiming that, you know, they want free market, he said these big businesses are only trying to cover up the fact that they do not want competition and they do not want transparency.
Wow. Eliot Spitzer for president.
Oh, I'm a big Spitzer fan.
Do you know of any other politicians who are telling the truth about this kind of stuff?
No, not at all. I mean,
other than Dennis Kucinich, I mean, that's and Ralph Nader. I mean, that's about it. I mean, that's
right.
It's remarkable. Ellen, thanks so much for the report
today. That's today's news, and good to be back with you.
Great. Good to have you back, Ellen. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You're in the true Democracy Zone.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Unions representing Homeland Security employees are filing a lawsuit against the department. Collective bargaining rights within the DHS have been narrowed, and new regulations require employees to take concerns to an internal board appointed by the Secretary of Homeland Security. Mark Roth, General Counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, says the lack of due process will give management free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions. The AFGE, along with the Treasury Employees Union, the Federation of Federal Employees, and the Association of Agriculture Employees, are suing on the argument that the DHS is violating a law within the Homeland Security Act that calls for meaningful collective bargaining within the department.
As the AFL-CIO wrestles with several reform proposals triggered by the SEIU's plan to radically reorganize labor, the Communications Workers of America says what's needed is more grassroots union democracy and militancy. The CWA's Steve Early says merging of labor's bureaucratic structures alone just won't do it when it comes to revitalizing labor.
The thing that we need to not lose sight of here is that merging existing union structures is not going to lead to any great resurgence of labor in this country. We need to democratize existing unions. We need to involve members much greater than they are involved right now in their own unions. We need to strengthen the role of shop stewards. We need to strengthen the role of unions as effective workplace organizations.
Early says it's still possible that the SEIU and others may choose to bolt from the AFL-CIO if the reforms aren't adopted in the next few months, but that has happened before and labor has survived. Early says maintaining local union democracy and fully engaging members at the grassroots level is the key to advancing the labor movement.
All Danish trade union pension funds have decided to sell their shares of retail giant Walmart. The country's commerce unions have been petitioning the pension funds to drop the stock due to criticism of the company's management methods. In a statement, the union says European employers have begun using the management style of Walmart as a reason to get rid of regulations and collective agreement provisions. Sven Sorensen, president of the Danish Pension Fund for Handicraft and Manufacturing Trades, says there was no alternative but to drop the company because of its bad reputation and anti-human corporate philosophy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The Multinational Monitor released its top 10 worst corporations of 2004 last month. One company that made the list? Coca-Cola. According to the Monitor, workers at a Coke bottling plant in Colombia have been terrorized for years by right-wing paramilitary forces. The New York City Council sent a fact-finding mission to the plant and found 179 human rights violations against Coca-Cola workers. The company has refused requests for an independent investigation into the allegations.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know the Job Creation Act? Are you familiar with this thing? This
sped through Congress while everyone else was distracted by the presidential election. They write in the progress report today from the Center for American Progress. It included a dubious provision that allows corporations to repatriate, that is, bring back from foreign countries, their piles of foreign profits at a lower than normal corporate tax rate. Isn't that sweet? The tax holiday, it was called. It's going to eliminate somewhere between $100 and $500 billion in taxes that corporations will pay by the end of this year. Who's going to pick up that bill? You and me. Or our grandchildren, if Bush just piles it on the debt, which is, of course, what he's been doing. A congressional study found tax revenues could increase by $311 billion over the next 10 years if the federal government started enforcing tax obligations and closing loopholes. However, and this is the big lookout, corporate tax receipts relative to the size of the economy have sunk to a level not seen since 1983 and before that, the Great Depression. Yes, Ronald Reagan cut them down in 1983 to this level for 1 year. You recall, Reagan came into office, tax cuts, 1980, and cut taxes for a year or two, and then for the last 5 or 6 years of his presidency, every single year he raised taxes to prevent a disaster. So it was just that one little blip there in 1983 where corporate taxes were at this level. The last time they were this low, 1929. And what happened? Well, most of you listening don't remember from personal experience, but we know the story. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. TomHartman.com is our website if you want to drop into the live chat room and participate in that. If you'd like to be on the air, though, call a toll-free number. Steve in Atlanta on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Calling at you from one of these Atlanta suburbs where I feel like a small blueberry in a big kettle of red tomato soup.
there's a lot of blueberry. You know, I lived in Atlanta for like 16 years, I think, in northern Atlanta, up in Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of good people in that city.
There's some around, but, you know, we have no voter verifiable paper trail, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
I have a question. I need you to help me win a water cooler war regarding corporations and government.
Okay.
Okay. I understand the premise. You know, I've been reading Unequal Protection. I understand corporations aren't people. They don't vote. So they should not be allowed in government. Okay. Now, first of all, you do mean that they should not be allowed to lobby and they should not be allowed to donate to political parties. Is that correct?
Right. The law historically, the way the law was read, and certainly what Teddy Roosevelt was fighting so hard for, and actually got passed in 1907, a federal ban on corporate lobbying or corporate donations to political campaigns, was that if individuals, human beings, want to contribute to a politician, they want to do so on behalf of a corporate agenda, you can't stop that. They're voters. They're citizens. But if a corporation is going to give money to a politician, that's wrong because a corporation isn't a voter. And a corporation isn't affected if a politician makes a decision that says the air is going to be dirtier or the water is going to be more dangerous or you know, things like this, because corporations aren't living bodies. They don't have to worry about their children. They don't have to, you know, they don't fear death. They, you know, all those kinds of things. If laws are passed about, you know, how things have to be done and what the penalties will be, corporations don't go to jail. So, you know, that was the rationale.
And so, you know, when I bring this up, you know, to Aunt Mary during Christmas or, you know, Cousin Lee during Thanksgiving, you know, they kind of have a hard time understanding. You know, they say, well, who's going to represent the business interests? Or they say something like, you know, well, can't a business support a candidate whose policies, you know, favor those of the corporation?
Yeah, the answer, yes, I do. And the answer to the question is no, a corporation should not be able to support a candidate. Individuals who work for the corporation can. It's what's interesting here is, for example, if you go back and you look at the history of the Ford Motor Company, in Henry Ford was having some battles with the government. I don't remember the details of them. I believe I make reference to them in Unequal Protection. I certainly talk about Ford in the book. And he was having some battles with government in Dearborn. And it was his workers, his employees, who came to his defense. I mean, the reality is that if you want politicians to hear from you know, people about business, if you work for, whether it's a giant corporation or whether it's a small company down the street, and that company is endangered by some policy that some politician is thinking about passing, you'll pick up the phone and call your elected representative. So there is a natural check and balance in this, and that is that to the extent that the corporate behavior affects people, those people will lobby in favor of or against the corporate behavior. Very simple. On the other hand, if the corporation is allowed to use its unlimited wealth and power to lobby businesses, it can get around the will of the people. I mean, there are times when we want to say, hey, you know, we need to pass a law that's going to help this corporation. We need to pass regulations that are going to make it easier for this company to do business. We need to change the laws so that we can have, you know, X, Y, or Z. It's a new industry. Let's birth a new solar power industry, right? We, the people, would say, let's do that. Well, corporations are going to make the profits from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That's fine. Because it's we, the people, saying this is what we want.
Very good. Now, I don't really understand a lot of corporate structure, you know, S corporations, all that.
Yeah.
But what about a small business, like an owner of a company? I guess he obviously can be allowed to contribute his money.
Sure. Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. And so can a stockholder or CEO of a large corporation. I mean, if the president of GE wants to give, you know, $1 million to a politician or a political party or what, I mean, there are limits now on how much even individuals can give. Now it's $2,000 per person. But, you know, if they want to participate in the political process by putting in money.
Comes out of their pocket.
Yeah, that's fine. No problem.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Good to hear from you, Steve. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Mike in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
Okay, a couple of real quick points. One, about the mercury in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the problem is that, unless we get to a situation where people can actually see and feel the problem, like they did in London in 50s, and like they did in L.A. in the 60s and 70s, they don't think anything's wrong. And to show you how that works, here in D.C., they pointed out that we had, I don't know if you heard about it, we had a real problem with the water system because lead was found in it.
Yeah.
It was into the water system.
Yes.
Well, you can't see lead in the water. You can't smell it. But I've got a humidifier here, an evaporative humidifier. Put 2 or 3 gallons of water through there, and you'd be amazed at the crud that accumulates around the heating element.
Sure.
But people don't, it doesn't percolate through their heads because the water isn't coming out purple.
Right.
You know, and that's part of the problem. They don't see it, they don't taste it, and of course, the grand leader tells them everything's fine, and since they've already reasoning capacity into abeyance, obviously, to vote him in, they believe it.
Yeah, and this is the problem, is that the grand leader right now, like Ronald Reagan before him, is the toady for huge, powerful corporate interests. And in fact, you know, I had Tom Tancredo, the congressman from Colorado on this program almost 2 years ago and a year and a half ago, and said, Congressman Tancredo, can you name, he's a Republican. And we were talking about something else. We were talking about immigration, which is his big thing. But in any case, I said, just as an aside, can you name for me, please, since you're a Republican member of Congress, I'm sure you'd know this, can you name for me, please, one piece of legislation that has been introduced into the House of Representatives or the Senate and that has become law, been signed into law by George W. Bush, that was put forward by Republicans that benefited humans more than it benefited corporations? Just one. He was unable to do so.
Of course.
And I've had this contest now for a year and a half. If somebody can call up and identify one piece of legislation that was put forward by the Republicans and signed into law by Bush that benefits individual humans, that benefits we the people, taxpayers, voters, more than it benefits some large corporate interest or an industry or a lobbying group, then I'll send them a free copy of any one of my books that I've written. There are 16 of them in print right now. I'll send them a free copy of any one of my books that they want. And nobody's won the prize. So, I mean, that's it, Mike. And you're right. To a large extent, it's the fact that people don't see it. They do see it, but they don't see it. And here's the difference between now and 30 years ago. 30 years ago, you had, or even 15 years ago, 15 years ago, you had 60 Minutes doing a special on Alar, the pesticide, where they went out and they said, okay, in Washington State, they're spraying these apples with this pesticide, and this pesticide causes, I think my recollection was it causes cancer or causes some hideous disease or some problem with it, right? And immediately, I mean, within a week of the airing of this expose, the state of Washington apple industry was just wiped out because people stopped buying apples. And so the state of Washington got together, you know, the apple industry got together and they passed and the pesticide industry, it was the pesticide industry more than the apple. I mean, the apple industry's solution would be simple. Stop using the pesticide. But the pesticide manufacturer, they got together and they said, we need to have a law that says that if you slander a vegetable, it's a crime. If you question the safety of the food supply, it's a crime. And that law was passed in Washington State, and it's now I'm not sure how many states now. I know when I wrote The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, which was 6 or 7 years ago, at that point in time, there were 13 states that had passed what are called veggie libel laws. The most famous implementation of them was when Oprah Winfrey was sued by the Texas cattleman because she had said that she was not going to eat hamburger after she had a guest on her program talking about what's in hamburger. Mm-hmm. And we have now laws that, you know, to protect the pesticide industry, essentially, or the agricultural industry. It's not, as opposed to protecting us, we the people. And so now it's not just that people don't see it. It's that people don't hear about it in the press because the press can't report it because it's against the law.
But even when they hear about it, like, for example, they have pointed out that we have rocket fuel in the water.
Yeah, perchlorate.
You're right. And now the industrialists are admitting it, saying, but nobody's died of it. You can't show that this stuff is dangerous. It's just, you're just making mountains out of molehills.
Yeah,
and people are buying it.
Right, and they're trying to do the same. They're trying to bring back DDT. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Good point, Mike. Mike, I got to move along, but I appreciate the call and the good point you made and well said. These are the issues. These are the real issues. When you get down underneath it all, you know, yes, there are folks who are really concerned about abortion. There are folks who want the Ten Commandments everywhere. There are folks who are concerned about, you know, this, that, and the other. But when you get right down to it, it all comes down ultimately to power. And one of the main instruments of power in this country and in any nation that is essentially a capitalistic nation. And by the way, I say that as an advocate of capitalism, of regulated capitalism. In any capitalist country, you're going to find that ultimately power boils down to money. And so here, I got this from Kim in Ohio. It turns out that there's this group called Citizens for a Strong Ohio. Now, you would think with a name like that it would be made up of citizens, right? Kim notes, they were formed to try and block Judge Alice Roby Resnick. the only Democrat currently on the Ohio Supreme Court, from keeping her seat in 2000. This is a group that waged a $4 million advertising campaign against Resnick, including TV footage of cash being piled on the scales of justice. Right, accusing her, the only Democratic member of the Ohio Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, accusing her of having problems that had to do with finances. So Cliff Arnebeck, an attorney with the Alliance for Democracy in Ohio, sued them and said, we want to know who your contributors are. Who is this Citizens for a Strong Ohio? And they said, we're not going to tell you. And he said, you have to tell. You know, it's you're lobbying. I mean, you've got an obligation. And they said, no, we're not. And it went all the way up to, apparently, to the state Supreme Court. And on Saturday, they were forced, or on Friday, on Saturday, they released it. They were forced to release the information. Turns out the Citizens for a Strong Ohio was not made up of citizens at all. It was made up of, well, here are the $100,000 donors, A.K. Steel, Nationwide Mutual Insurance, State Farm, Fifth Third National Bank, MNBA Bank, Honda of America Manufacturing. And you go through the list here, Anheuser-Busch Company, Artex Oil Company, AT&T, Caterpillar Incorporated. Oh, here's I'm doing it alphabetically. Joe W. Cherry. Here's a human being. He put in $50. Cleveland Clinic Health System, CNA Financial Corporation, Columbia Gas of Ohio, Cooper Fire and Tire Rubber Company, Daimler Chrysler, Dana Corporation, Deloitte & Touche, Enron Corporation, Exxon Corporation, Farmers Insurance Group of Companies, the Ford Motor Company, Humana, Kroger Company, MCI WorldCom, Midland Company, Noble Oil Company, PG&E Generating Company, Philip Morris Management Corporation, Procter & Gamble Company, Verizon Service Groups, White Castle Systems. Well, we've got a human in here, so I guess maybe they should call it Citizen for Strong Ohio. Well, actually, there were a few people who had put in $25, but you get it? We are citizens. We are corporations. This is the edge, my friends. This is the edge where a capitalist democracy becomes a fascistic state when the corporations take over. And it's not a good thing. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The freezing temperatures of a cold winter can give a big boost to groundwater in the spring. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A typical winter across the northern United States and Canada might include long stretches of temperatures below freezing. In the spring, the soil will thaw and the snow will melt and seep into it. That situation is much different when winter weather bounces above and below freezing, and those warmer winters can lead to flooding and soil erosion. Jamie Douglas is a PhD candidate in engineering at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She works with environmental engineers to study how winter weather patterns relate to snow melt in the spring and the way that moisture seeps into groundwater. Douglas says some winters have cycles where temperatures go up, the snow melts, and then temperatures drop below freezing again. She says the moisture freezes in the ground just below the surface. The result is a layer of soil that's hard as concrete, and moisture runs off it instead of sinking into it. Douglas says when the soil is thoroughly frozen, the snow melt at the end of the winter and the spring rain can cause erosion and even flooding.
In general, people think that infiltration is preferable to runoff because you're not causing any sort of erosion, and the infiltration is going down to become groundwater, and then you're not going to have the flood. What we get a lot of times in spring is big storms, so you're raining on frozen ground, and all that water just runs off. Well, that can flood streams, so it can be a flooding issue, too. The more of that water that you can get into the ground, the better off you are.
Douglas is working on a project to monitor the way melting snow infiltrates into soil across northern Wisconsin. She says the results will help scientists predict groundwater conditions in the future based on winter weather. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If there's something you find to believe in, then the message must get through.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. In the news today, Science News reporting, just an aside, it has nothing to do with anything we've been talking about. I just wanted to toss this in here. They have found that kids with ADHD have a little less brain matter in one part of the brain and a whole lot more brain matter in another part of the brain. In net, they actually have more brain matter in the gray matter, you know, the stuff where you actual thinking takes place. But the headline said ADHD kids have less brain matter. Strange. It was really strange. You had to read the article to find out that the headline was wrong. It's like they were working so hard to say, no, ADHD, that's a disease. That's all there is to it. Anyhow, you know, that's a whole other rant, a whole other pet rant of mine. John in Shreveport, Louisiana on the line. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Howdy, sir. Just want, first of all, what's your definition of progressive?
You know, I'm not sure I have one.
Okay. That's fair enough. I want your opinion on something. See, I got two parents. They're both registered Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you if you think they're really Democrats. Okay, because if based on this information I'm about to share with you and see what you think, okay? They don't want the government taking away their guns. They're against abortion. They think the government's too big. And they think the U.S. Constitution really means what it really says.
And what does it really say, John?
Well, I could get it out and read it to you, but
does it really say that the president can lock you up in jail if you stand with a protest sign outside on a public street near some place where he's speaking?
Okay, it says that the government shall not make restrictions upon free speech. That's in the First Amendment.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
So
you think they're Democrats, though?
I have no idea, John.
I believe that. Okay, appreciate you calling. Let me know that. Thank you,
dear. Sure enough. I love it. I love it. Yeah, the partisan folks, isn't it amazing? Yeah, the reality, John, is that the Democratic Party is large enough, I think, and not speaking as a Democrat, because I'm not. I'm not a Democrat, and I'm not a booster for the Democratic Party. I'm not paid by the Democratic Party. I'm not, you know, I voted for John Kerry last time. I voted for, you know, the time before that, I voted for a Republican, Jim Jeffords. I voted for a Democrat, Pat Leahy. I voted for an independent, Bernie Sanders. And I voted for Ralph Nader. I mean, you know, go figure. But anyhow, the Democratic Party, I think, you know, speaking in their defense, is large enough to encompass all of those things that you were just talking about. Absolutely. And, but boy, the efforts of the Republican spin machine to get their little slogans on the radio are just remarkable. Oh, well. It's Tom Hartman, the Democracy Zone. Uncommon sense from the radical middle, helping you win the water cooler wars.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Unions representing Homeland Security employees are filing a lawsuit against the department. Collective bargaining rights within the DHS have been narrowed, and new regulations require employees to take concerns to an internal board appointed by the Secretary of Homeland Security. Mark Roth, General Counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, says the lack of due process will give management free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions. The AFGE, along with the Treasury Employees Union, the Federation of Federal Employees, and the Association of Agriculture Employees, are suing on the argument that the DHS is violating a law within the Homeland Security Act that calls for meaningful collective bargaining within the department.
As the AFL-CIO wrestles with several reform proposals triggered by the SEIU's plan to radically reorganize labor, the Communications Workers of America says what's needed is more grassroots union democracy and militancy. The CWA's Steve Early says merging of labor's bureaucratic structures alone just won't do it when it comes to revitalizing labor.
The thing that we need to not lose sight of here is that merging existing union structures is not going to lead to any great resurgence of labor. In this country. We need to democratize existing unions. We need to involve members much greater than they are involved right now in their own unions. We need to strengthen the role of shop stewards. We need to strengthen the role of unions as effective workplace organizations.
Early says it's still possible that the SEIU and others may choose to bolt from the AFL-CIO if the reforms aren't adopted. ousted in the next few months, but that has happened before and Labor has survived. Early says maintaining local union democracy and fully engaging members at the grassroots level is the key to advancing the labor movement.
All Danish trade union pension funds have decided to sell their shares of retail giant Walmart. The country's commerce unions have been petitioning the pension funds to drop the stock due to criticism of the company's management methods. In a statement, the union says European employers have begun using the management style of Walmart as a reason to get rid of regulations and collective agreement provisions. Sven Sorensen, president of the Danish Pension Fund for Handicraft and Manufacturing Trades, says there was no alternative but to drop the company because of its bad reputation and anti-human corporate philosophy. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Multinational Monitor released its top 10 worst corporations of 2004 last month. One company that made the list? Coca-Cola. According to the Monitor, workers at a Coke bottling plant in Colombia have been terrorized for years by right-wing paramilitary forces. The New York City Council sent a fact-finding mission to the plant and found 179 human rights violations against Coca-Cola workers. The company has refused requests for an independent investigation into the allegations.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Let's take another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. Poor Lloyd Blankfein. He's the chief operating officer at the Wall Street giant Goldman Sachs, but it's reported that he made, quote, only $600,000 in salary last year. That's truly sad, but before you send a check to the Blankfein Relief Fund, note that at the end of the year, Goldman Sachs put a little something extra in Lloyd's stocking, a bonus of $20 million. He's but one of the top Wall Streeters who've danced into this new year with a total of $15.9 billion in executive bonuses. While wages of America's highly productive workers are being held beneath the rate of inflation by the corporate elite, these Wall Street darlings are porking up, with top investment bankers hiking their annual bonuses by some 15% over the previous year's haul. You'll be delighted to know that this showering of corporate largesse on themselves has led the fortunate bankers to, quote, rediscover conspicuous consumption, in the words of one news report. Manhattan's dealers in luxury goods are experiencing a surge of giddy impulse buyers. $6 million apartments on Manhattan's Tony Upper East Side are suddenly in demand, as are such show-off cars as the Maybach, an exclusive line of Mercedes-Benz autos with sticker prices starting at $315,000. There is a sense of entitlement among those wallowing in this windfall. After all, they say, we work hard. Of course, migrant farm workers work hard too, but, oh well, never mind. Even the super-rich bankers who try to be what they think of as modest are lost in this culture of excess. As one said, I have a sailboat, a motorboat, an apartment, an SUV. What could I possibly need? He paused for a second, then said, maybe a little Porsche for the Hamptons house. This is Jim Hightower saying, money, it's all a matter of perspective and fat bonuses.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I know we talked about it a little bit in the, not a little bit, for a good chunk, about half of the first hour of the program, the vote in Iraq. But I didn't get, there were a couple of points I didn't wrap back around to that I think are really worth revisiting here. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com, our website, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Even if you are an employee of the Heritage Foundation or whatever, anyhow, welcome back. A little in-joke from the last hour. The voter registration list for Iraq. This is interesting. The question, of course, how do you come up with a voter registration list? How do you come up with, do you do a census? Can you go door to door and register people to vote? How do you have people registered to vote? Well, what they did was they said, take your food ration card. See, the majority of people in Iraq are unemployed right now. There's over 50% unemployment. And so most of those people, the way that they get their food is they have a food ration card. They get free food, and they present that food at the, and it's like food stamps. They present that card at the local grocer, and he says, okay, you've got $9 left on your card. You can have, this, that, and the other. And then the grocers get the money from the government, which gets it from you and me. It's supposed to be getting it from oil revenues, but that hasn't quite worked out. And so anyhow, everybody has these, not everybody, but everybody who is unemployed, certainly, and or employed below the poverty level in Iraq, has these food ration cards. There's 14 million of them. 14 million people with these food ration cards. And so they said, okay, we'll use this as one of the ways to register people to vote. This is our database. We know these people are citizens. And now it wasn't the limit of it, but it was a piece of it. And so, for example, this is Khalid, is an Iraqi blogger. This is often an Iraqi blog. And I quote, he says, the way the voting happened is that you go to the voting center and you go to the man who is your ration dealer. The one that you take the ration from him every month. So you tell him that you're going to vote. He marks your name on his list, and then you vote. That way the government will know exactly who voted and who didn't. Two dealers said that the next year's food ration card won't be given to those who didn't vote. Now, of course, this is not the government's policy. And, I'm sure that our government would be horrified by that, because if it was policy and it got out, if that cat got out of the bag, it would be a scandal. It'd be a terrible thing. It would be a terrible scandal. But here we have this situation, shall we say, where there is a widespread perception in Iraq that this is what you had to do. You had to use you had to vote, or you may not get free food the following year. And I have to wonder, who would benefit from that perception? Why would such a rumor be spread? Or could it just be paranoia? I mean, oppressed people living under heavy oppression, in my experience, traveling around the world, people who live under heavy oppression tend to engage in a lot of conspiracy type thinking. They're trying to make sense out of what's going on around them. And very often there are conspiracies. I mean, oppression is itself a form of conspiracy. As the level of oppression in the United States increases, you're seeing more and more people looking for what's the real agenda here? Is it, has the Heritage Foundation and Paul Weyrich and the Dominionists, the people who want the Bible to be the sole authority, taken over the federal government, or is it the multinational corporations? If they taken over the federal, what's the conspiracy? Who killed John Kennedy? And so conspiracy theories are just, you know, rampant in the Middle East because you've got a lot of oppressed people there. I mean, they're rampant everywhere all over the world, of course. My experience has been that the level of rumor is in direct opposite proportion to the freedom of the press and the transparency of the society. If you have a relatively transparent society with a free press, then there's not a lot of rumor and there are not a lot of conspiracy theories. And if you have a society that is not transparent, where the governance is not transparent, and where the press is censored, as in Iraq, probably most Americans don't know. Alawi has forbidden Al Jazeera from broadcasting from Iraq. He's shut down a bunch of newspapers. He's put editors in jail. There is no free press in Iraq any longer. He passed a law saying that it was against the law to criticize him. So if you criticize Alawi in the press in Iraq, you go to prison. Right now. By the way, his party may have only got as much as 10% of the vote. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how this stuff shakes out. Many Iraqis think that he's the guy who is, because he's been so tied in with the Americans and used to be a CIA agent and, you know, blew up school buses and theaters and things when Saddam was running Iraq and was a terrorist then, that there's even one of the more prominent conspiracy theories that floats around, particularly in the Shia community, is that Alawi is responsible for the terrorist acts. And that they're doing this, the terrorists against the Americans, in order to keep things unstable so that they can have more power and they can, you know, all this kind of interesting stuff. And of course, Alawi was flown around on the campaign trail on American aircraft. American helicopters took him from city to city and to the extent that he campaigned. But what's going to be really interesting is if Ahmed Chalabi, who used to be our guy, before we discovered that all those years that he was in tight with Fife and Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Pearl, that he was actually a spy for the Iranians, that Ahmed Chalabi was providing the Iranians with intelligence from inside the U.S. government. And so we kind of cut him loose. In fact, we even debated whether we should put him in prison. And then he said, well, you do that, and I'll tell what I know about the United States and about this administration. And all of a sudden we were like, well, we're not gonna throw Ahmed Chalabi in jail. No, no, no. And then the Jordanians, of course, they want him because he defrauded hundreds of thousands of Jordanians out of millions of dollars in a big bank swindle. He's been convicted in absentia in Jordan for bank fraud and convicted to and sentenced to 20 some odd years of hard labor. But in any case, here's the interesting thing. Chalabi has lined himself up with the guy who forced the elections. That's al-Sistani, the Grand Ayatollah. Now, Sistani, ironically enough, while on the one hand, he's the man who's responsible for the fact that elections were held in Iraq this last weekend. On the other hand, can't vote in those elections because he's a citizen of Iran, not Iraq. He was born in Iran. But see, he's Shia, and the holiest sites in the Shia world are in Iraq, whereas the holiest sites for the Sunnis are in Saudi Arabia. And so, but not the totally holiest. I mean, you know, the Shia still revere Mecca and Medina as well, but you know, they've got some heavy-duty holy sites in Iraq, more so than in Iran. So this guy came back into Iraq, and the Shia really want to take Iraq. They really want it. And Chalabi is a Shia, and he's tossed in with them. And so now American officials, now Judith Miller, the New York Times reporter, who helped gin up the war by reporting on Chalabi. She apparently has a connection to Chalabi. The Kool-Aid that he was serving to Wolfowitz and Feith and these guys in the Pentagon, you know, oh, they'll greet you with flowers, everything's going to be fine, it's, you know, the you know, blah, blah, blah. This Kool-Aid that Chalabi was serving to them, he was serving to Judith Miller as well, and she was publishing his lies on the front page of the New York Times. Yes, there are weapons of mass destruction there. Yes, he's got an advanced nuclear program. Yes, he's got, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, and to the best of my knowledge, Judith Miller has never been held to account for this. But in any case, she, on MSNBC's Hardball recently, made the comment that the Bush administration is now reaching out to Chalabi. Does this seem a little schizophrenic? I mean, at one point he was our guy. He was going to be the next leader of Iraq. Then he was a criminal and we were going to throw him in jail, and he had to flee to Iran. Remember, he fled from Iraq to Iran to hide out when they found out in the Pentagon that he, during the previous 4 or 5 years, that he'd been in tight with these guys. And this whole neocon bunch, that he'd been in tight with them, that he was feeding all the secrets back to the Ayatollahs in Iran. When that came out, he had to flee to Iran to avoid being arrested. And then he started threatening to tell what he knew. And so Alawi said, well, you can come back to Iraq now. And the Americans said, you can come back now. And so he comes back, and then he goes to Sistani and says, hey, you're going to be the power in this country. And this is a guy who understands power and how to play it like a fiddle. He has so outmaneuvered the Bush administration. He has made such fools of them. There are some who believe that the only reason that we're in Iraq is because Ahmed Chalabi was able to convince some very naive people in the Bush administration, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Feith, Pearl, Bush, was able to convince some very, and Rice, was able to convince some very naive people of some facts that simply were not facts, some things that simply weren't true. And while you had the former arms inspectors and their entire team saying there's nothing there, you had El Baradei, the head of the UN nuclear group, saying hey, there's nothing there. You had Hans Blix saying, oh, you know, we're searching where there's nothing there. You had the whole world telling the Bush administration, we don't think he has any weapons of mass destruction. Nonetheless, George Bush said, no, we can't wait another 2 weeks for Blix and El Baradei to finish their inspection. We've got to go in now. Well, of course, you couldn't wait 2 weeks, because if you did, then the UN would say, no, there's nothing there. Definitively, as we have now discovered, after having spent $1 billion of your and my dollars. So anyhow, it looks to me like Chalabi is going to end up the big winner. We'll see. 20 minutes after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush O, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, democraticmatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Anyone here a deist? Asks Marion in the chat room. Boy, it's been a long time since the deists were held in high esteem in the United States. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website if you want to drop into the chat room. Congressional Republicans agree to launch Social Security campaign. They're fine-tuning this thing. It's not, actually, it would be almost wrong to say they're fine-tuning it, because this is something that they've been working on for 20 years. The Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, the Republicans, in general, those who want to roll back every last remnant of FDR's New Deal and LBJ's Great Society, just devastate it all and have an entirely corporate-run state. And now they're bringing corporations into this Social Security thing. Now that we've established that corporations are people under the Constitution, and they can give money. They can participate. You know, as in the last hour, we read the list of Citizens for a Strong Ohio that turned out to be all corporations. Not all, nearly all. The vast majority, certainly the vast majority of the dollars, the vast majority of the numbers. Citizens, yes. And so now what the cons are saying to the corporations is, you know, you have to pay part of that Social Security tax, that 6.2%, I think it is, contribution, you have to kick in. And so what we're going to suggest when we privatize Social Security is that your share of this is not going to go up, but the individual's share will go up. So, you know, people will have to pay more, but corporations may even have to pay less, because there's less going into Social Security and more going into private accounts. And so the corporations are going, whoa, not bad. We'll give you some money for that. This is another example, back to Steve in Atlanta's call in the last hour about, you know, what's the damage of corporations participating in politics? And it is that the interest of an institution is very often different from the interests of human beings and voters. And institutions, therefore, historically have not been allowed to participate in politics. Whether the institution is a corporation, whether it's a church, whether it's a union, whatever it may be, right across the board, there have been these rules and limitations on political activity. So, you know, the individuals can do it. People can participate. So, and now here we have from the Washington Post, congressional Republicans, after 3 months of internal debate, this weekend launched a month-long campaign to try to convince constituents that rewriting the Social Security law would be cheaper and less risky than leaving it alone. As the White House opened a campaign to pressure several Senate Democrats to support the changes. The Republicans left an annual retreat in the Allegheny Mountains, writes Mike Allen, with a 104-page playbook titled Saving Social Security, a deliberate effort echo of the language President Bill Clinton used to argue that the retirement system's trust funds should be built up in anticipation of the baby boomers' retirement, which, by the way, it is being. And they say, well, didn't I hear you say that? Didn't I hear Bill Clinton say that there's a crisis, a Social Security crisis? There could be a crisis in Social Security? He was talking about what might happen if the Republicans got their hands on it. You got to put these things in context. The Congressional Republicans' confidential plan was developed with the advice of pollsters, marketing experts, and communications consultants, and was provided to the Washington Post by a Republican official. Apparently, it was not put together with the help of experts in Social Security, but pollsters, marketing experts, and communications consultants. And the blueprint urges lawmakers to promote personalization rather than privatization. Yes. A fine idea. Nancy Pelosi says on today she's going to have a pre-bottle to President Bush's State of the Union address. He's going to use the State of the Union address to promote this $900 billion giveaway to the banks that helped finance his election.
Love guides.
My daughter has a million things going on in her daily life, from softball to band to voice lessons. My husband and I like to make sure she doesn't spend her idle time idle, because an idle mind is a playground for trouble. You see, occupying our daughter's free time and keeping her active makes us feel confident that she won't be hanging out with the wrong crowds.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Unions representing Homeland Security employees are filing a lawsuit against the department. Collective bargaining rights within the DHS have been narrowed, and new regulations require employees to take concerns to an internal board appointed by the Secretary of Homeland Security. Mark Roth, General Counsel for the American Federation of Government Employees, says the lack of due process will give management free rein to retaliate against employees who challenge management decisions. The AFGE, along with the Treasury Employees Union, the Federation of Federal Employees, and the Association of Agriculture Employees, are suing on the argument that the DHS is violating a law within the Homeland Security Act that calls for meaningful collective bargaining within the department.
As the AFL-CIO wrestles with several reform proposals triggered by the SEIU's plan to radically reorganize labor, the Communications Workers of America says what's needed is more grassroots union democracy and militancy. The CWA's Steve Early says merging of labor's bureaucratic structures alone just won't do it when it comes to revitalizing labor.
The thing that we need need to not lose sight of here is that simply merging existing union structures is not going to lead to any great resurgence of labor in this country. We need to democratize existing unions. We need to involve members much greater than they are involved right now in their own unions. We need to strengthen the role of shop stewards. We need to strengthen the role of unions as effective workplace organizations.
Early says it's still possible that the SEIU and others may choose to bolt from the AFL-CIO if the reforms aren't adopted in the next few months, but that has happened before and labor has survived. Early says maintaining local union democracy and fully engaging members at the grassroots level is the key to advancing the labor movement.
All Danish trade union pension funds have decided to sell their shares of retail giant Walmart. The country's commerce unions have been petitioning the pension funds to drop the stock due to criticism of the company's management methods. In a statement, the union says European employers have begun using the management style of Walmart as a reason to get rid of regulations and collective agreement provisions. Sven Sorensen, president of the Danish Pension Fund for Handicraft and Manufacturing Trades, says there was no alternative but to drop the company because of its bad reputation and anti-human corporate philosophy. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Multinational Monitor released its top 10 worst corporations of 2004 last month. One company that made the list? Coca-Cola. According to the Monitor, workers at a Coke bottling plant in Colombia have been terrorized for years by right-wing paramilitary forces. The New York City Council sent a fact-finding mission to the plant and found 179 human rights violations against Coca-Cola workers. The company has refused requests for an independent investigation into the allegations.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Round here, we always stand up straight. Round here, something radiates.
Is America still number one? Asks Michael Ventura in a brilliant column in the Austin Chronicle. I want to share a few tidbits from this with you. This really speaks to the crisis in America that has come about as a result of conservative economic policies, by and large economic policies, and some of our other policies as well, but mostly the conservative economic policies and how they are devastating America relative to the rest of the world. Before we do, though, let's go to the phones. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Or who was it? Somebody in our chat room said,
yes, well, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, how you doing today?
I'm doing, brother.
What's up?
Hey, you know, let's put this on the table. You know, it's supposed to be a free country, and we're supposed to have the right to debate stuff, and the will of the people is supposed to be paramount. So that being said, the question I have to you and the listeners and anybody that's interested, if privatization is so great, why didn't the Bush crime family, when his daddy was in, why didn't they privatize the savings and loans crisis? Why didn't they privatize the stadium in Texas that May Jr. that's in the White House is a millionaire, multimillionaire?
Well, they did.
Huh?
They did in both cases. They took our tax dollars and they gave them to private corporations.
No, they took all the profits and privatized them, but they socialized all the costs.
That's right.
That's on the books, so they didn't privatize.
That's exactly. Well, okay, arguably, but I mean that's the imperative is internalize profits, externalize costs.
No, but let's go on. What about corporate Gulf War I and corporate Gulf War II? Those are corporate wars. Don't give me this freedom jive. Why didn't they privatize them? They are
privatized, Armin. You know the second largest army in Iraq. You know who it is?
But getting to that point, it
no,
was
no,
socialized.
Seriously. Do you know who the
no,
second? Do you know
what,
who?
Halliburton.
No, yeah, the second largest army in Iraq is not England. It's not the United Kingdom.
Wait
the second
minute.
Largest army
up.
In Iraq is private corporations, corporate contractors.
Where do they get the exclusive right to arbitrarily dictate when it's privatized and when it's socialized and how they scheme the thing together?
Yeah.
Who gave them that right without a debate?
Well, that's a very good question. And I don't think that you and I, as much as it may sound like we're disagreeing, disagree with each other at all.
I know what you're saying, but it's confusing to people that don't understand it.
Okay,
what I'm saying is he didn't exclusively use private money to build that stadium in Texas. He went to the taxpayers. They went to the taxpayers to back up their savings and loan losses, and that went on the books to the taxpayers as debt. They got the benefit, privatizing all the benefit economically from
right.
all these blunders.
That's my point.
But we got the bill.
That's
my,
that was my that was my point. That's my point exactly. I agree with you.
But why didn't they? If there's such
why didn't they make it? Well, because they're obviously.
Why don't they get out of Washington and use their own money?
Armin, you're being rhetorical, and I know it. You and I both know that they really don't believe in true privatization. What they really believe is in socialism for corporations and the wealthy, and laissez-faire, free market capitalism for everybody else. I mean, you know, we both know that. You know,
it's not in the Constitution.
No, it's not. The Constitution
doing. Never was intended to be that way.
That you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Armin. And this country was founded on a political system known as constitutionally limited democracy or constitutionally limited democratic republic, not on an economic system. And this is where the Ayn Rand folks and the American Enterprise Institute and all these extreme right-wingers, as Bernie called them, these extreme right-wingers, these economic conservatives, in quotes, because they're, in my opinion, they're really not conservatives, but whatever you want to call them, get it so wrong, and they are doing, frankly, unfortunately, such a good job in causing Americans to think that democracy and economics are somehow the same thing. That capitalism and democracy are the same thing, and they're not. One's democracy is a political system. Capitalism is an economic system, and in many ways they come into conflict with each other, and that's of course why you have regulated capitalism. It's why you have folks like Eliot Spitzer. It's why you have laws like why you have organizations like the Security and Exchange Commission. Because left to its own devices, capitalism would devour democracy, and always has in the past. By the way, you find nations taken over by big corporations and by feudal estates, large, you know, very wealthy families. John in Boston on the line. Hey, John, what's
Hi,
on your
John,
mind today?
How you doing?
Good. What's
great,
up?
Great program as always.
Thank you.
You know, I've got a comment and a question. I'll hang up and listen to your answer. You know, I watched 60 Minutes last night, and every time I hear or see something about the Ukrainian people and the way they stood up against tyranny, the corrupt government, it reminds me of how the United States at one time used to be, you know, like in the 60s when we stood up and we marched and peacefully in the streets and that sort of thing. You know,
yes.
It seems like what we're reduced to right now is reality shows, personal scandals, and that sort of thing that takes up the corporate news. And what I wanted to ask you is, if this trend keeps continuing as far as the corporate takeover of this country, how many more years do you think we have left to have experience what we're experiencing now as a country?
Five.
And I'll hang up and I'll listen.
No, I'll tell you right now, John, I think we've got about 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
That shot of time?
I between now and the year after the next election, the future of this nation is going to be decided. I'm quite certain.
You know, people really have to wake up. I mean, because I wouldn't want to, live in a country other than this country. You know?
Yeah, I'd rather not. I like it here too. And a good friend of mine this morning, who is somebody whose opinion I respect a great deal and who's involved in the news business in Washington, said that. That he was thinking about moving to Canada. I'm like, what?
Well, you know, I wouldn't do that. But the thing is that when folks feel as though they're being cheated out of their vote,
mm-hmm.
what else is there left? I mean, that's the only common man's way of, running the government
yeah.
is by voting. And if your vote is not counted, you're cheated out of it. What other recourse do you have?
Yeah. And this is where we need to be actively taking back our government and taking back our democracy.
Yeah, it's really scary.
And the reality, John, is that the reason that the thing happened the way it did in the Ukraine was not just because there was a discrepancy between the exit polls and the election results, because the regime in the Ukraine, which was very friendly with Putin, actually controlled the press in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And so what had happened was there was a group of people who had done this first in Serbia. And they were actually Serbs. There was a group of young people in their 20s and 30s from Serbia who were brought into the Ukraine a month before the election, expecting that there would be an effort to steal the election. And they were brought in with a plan to take it back if it was stolen. And they had done this, by the way, before in the state of the former Soviet state of Georgia. And they had done it before in one of the other former Soviet states. I'm missing which one it was. One of the ones that's fairly unpronounceable. And what they did is they came in and they came up with a logo. Yep. They had a ticking clock. And they made stencils so you could spray paint this logo on sidewalks and on the sides of buildings and on mailboxes. They came up with a slogan, "His time is up," in the local language. They organized the exit polls. They worked with the United Nations and with these groups that are affiliated with both the Democratic and Republican parties in the United States to fund and organize the exit polls. And they put together the exit polls. And then as soon as the exit poll information was available, the night of the election, I mean, within an hour of the closing of the polls, before the government had an opportunity to announce the official results, they hit the internet and they hit the streets. And they had thousands of young people spray painting these slogans and proclaiming the fact that their candidate had won 52% of the vote, 53% of the vote, and the other candidate had lost, according to the exit polls. There wasn't anybody in the Ukraine who didn't know this, even though the official media didn't discuss it.
Right, right. You mentioned about friend you know going to Canada. Well,
yeah.
My wife and I took a trip this past summer to Nova Scotia, a beautiful little country, part of Canada.
Yeah.
But we found, too, that there are a lot of Americans starting to trickle in.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a bar, in a little pub, and we had a long discussion with a bartender from that neighborhood, and he was saying that American contractors are coming in now, you know, starting their own little businesses, and
mm-hmm.
he was sort of irritated because they're taking business away from the locals.
Yeah,
you know, but he said they are trickling in, and that's
I know
earlier.
I know, I know, and it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
What we need to do is we need to do what these guys in the Ukraine did. Is we need to prepare for this. We need to plan for this. We need to be ready in a year and a half when the next elections happen, or in almost 2 years now in the 2006 elections. When those elections happen, we need to be ready, particularly in those states like the state of Georgia here in the United States, where you have absolutely no paper trail whatsoever. We need to be ready. We need to have exit polls in place. We need to, and where there is vote fraud, we need to highlight it, and we need to just explosively proclaim it.
Well, it's been said already that the other Bush from Florida is going to be the candidate on the Republican side.
Yeah, that'll be in 2008. That'll be in 2008. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, we have to anticipate this. We have to prepare for it. John, I got to move along.
I appreciate the
call. Good to hear from you. Thank you. 1-866-889-8894. Mike in Orlando, Florida on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. I hope to make it to a town hall meeting with Tom Feeney this afternoon concerning Social Security reform.
Yeah. Tom Feeney's a Republican, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got information.
In fact, isn't he the Republican who paid the guy, who is alleged to have paid the guy to hack the voting machines?
That's the local man.
There you go. Okay.
Anyway, I was looking up information to take with me, and I found it interesting. Do you know how many billionaires are in this country right now?
In the United States?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the number off the top of my head. I know it's gone from like one or two 15 or 20 years ago to, you know, a few dozen, I believe.
275 of the world's 587 billionaires reside in the United States.
Wow. No, I didn't realize it was that many. That's
millionaires went up 14% in 2003. We now have 2.3 millionaires.
Yeah. Yeah.
2.3 million millionaires, in the United States.
Yeah, we have the biggest separation between the wealthy and the most wealthy and the most poor of any industrialized nation in the
world.
And
what I want to ask him is, why don't they feel that they can pay a higher percentage of that? See, I was looking also at the maximum tax earnings on Social Security, and it's still leveling at 87.9, going up to 90,000 next year.
No, it's 90,000 this year.
Right,
2005.
In 2005.
Yeah.
What hasn't changed, though, is the rate since 1992, the rate of 6.2% that they're using to figure out that, you know,
right.
That what they need to increase is that tax rate.
No, what they need to do is they need to eliminate the cap. This is the most regressive of the taxes. You only pay Social Security tax if you make $90,000 a year or less. If you make $150,000, if you made it, well, it's not, 2 times 9 is 18. If you made $180,000 a year, only half of your income gets taxed for Social Security. If you make $360,000 a year, only a quarter of your income gets taxed for Social Security. But if you make $90,000 a year, 100% of your income gets taxed for Social Security, and that's wrong. If you're a billionaire, if you're Bill Gates' income, you know, just the time, maybe 0.01% of your income is getting taxed for Social Security. The Social Security tax should not be capped at $90,000. It shouldn't simply be.
I understand that as far as the limits are concerned, but there are a few options there with whether you take away the cap or you just lower the rate for the lower income, and then you just
make it more progressive.
And you can, in conjunction with taking away the cap, that way the people with less of an income don't pay as much. And, you know, the way it seems, like I said, 14% more billionaires in 2003, it doesn't seem like we've suffered in the wealthy in this country. The money, $100 billion just in the Walton family alone.
Yeah, yeah. That, good point. Good point, Mike. I appreciate it. And good to hear from you. This is the basis of this article by Michael Venturi. He says, is America number one? He says, America is definitely not number one any longer, unfortunately. He said, no concept lies more firmly embedded in our national character than the notion that the USA is number one, the greatest. Our broadcast media are, in essence, continuous advertisements for the brand name America's number one. Any official office seeker, anybody looking for political office, would be committing political suicide if they didn't say that. But are we? He says, we are an empire without a manufacturing base. An empire that must borrow $2 billion a day from its competitors in order to function. The United States is 49th in the world in literacy. We are 28th out of 40 countries in mathematical literacy. One-third of our science teachers and one-half of our math teachers did not major in those subjects. 20% of Americans think the sun orbits the Earth. 17% think the Earth revolves around the sun once a day. Europe surpassed the United States in the mid-90s. 1990s is the largest producer of scientific literature. The European Union leads the U.S. in the number of science and engineering graduates, public research and development expenditures, new capital raised. The World Health Organization ranked the countries of the world in terms of overall health performance, and the U.S. was 37th. In the fairness of healthcare, we're 54th. The irony is that the United States spends more per capita for health care than any other nation in the world, yet we're 37th in the world in terms of overall health performance. The United States and South Africa are the only two developed countries in the world that do not provide health care for all their citizens. And he says, excuse me, but since when is South Africa a developed country? Anyway, that's the company we're keeping. Sure enough. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Eureka, California. Whoop, wrong button. Dave in Eureka, California on the line.
Yes,
hey, Dave.
I'm here. Hi.
Hey, here. You're there. It's not the dial tone. It's Dave. Hey, Dave.
Hey. Yeah.
What's up?
Getting back to the, because of my schedule, I kind of missed out on things, but I'll get back to the AT&T and SBC thing. I didn't have noted on the right thing with me to even phone you. And to get your number, I had to call the local station to get it after not being able to get through. So what do you know about the economics of why the big bell works so well? Because I had absolutely no problem with them ever, but I do, you know, I agree with you about large monopolies that take over things, but the big bell system was magnificent. I never knew of anyone that had any problem with
them. Oh, you mean before it was broken up?
Oh, correct.
Yeah, okay. I'll rant about that after the break, Dave. Stay tuned. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Open spaces are dangerous places for some amphibians, and they might need to be protected in captivity. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A major report on amphibians says hundreds of species around the world are headed toward extinction, and disease is a big part of the problem. To save amphibians, people might need to take unprecedented action to control disease in the wild and to breed amphibians in captivity. Simon Stewart is a biologist with the World Conservation Union, and he directed the Global Amphibian Assessment. Stewart says amphibians are under severe stress from climate change, chemical contamination, and loss of habitat. He says the stress appears to make them more vulnerable to a widespread and deadly disease that's caused by a fungus. Stewart says more research is needed on amphibians, but research is not enough. He says we need to create sanctuaries for these creatures, and we need to keep them free of the fungal disease. For some species, captive breeding might be the only way to save them from extinction.
Until we get a grip of managing this disease in the wild, we really run the risk of losing hundreds of species. It's for that reason that we're advocating both doing the research on the species and bringing quite a few of the species that we really might lose or are really close to the edge into captivity, so that we buy time, so we can learn about these species, we can look after them and rebuild their populations a bit in captivity, so that reintroductions can be done once we have some controlled areas in the wild which can be maintained disease-free.
Stewart says a major commitment to breeding in captivity and habitat protection in the wild would go a long way to protecting amphibians and bringing them back from the brink of extinction. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
Yes, democracy is coming if you and I get active, if you and I get out and participate. In answer to Dave's question from Eureka about what was wrong with the Big Bell Company, AT&T, when it was one big nationwide monopoly, it was absolutely stifling innovation. And regulating, we had regulated prices because it was a monopoly. And the world was moving ahead, and AT&T wasn't. And so, Jimmy Carter came along and said, break this thing up. And they broke it up into the baby bells, and they opened up the market for competition, and it led to the rise of MCI and Sprint and all these competitors, which started out at, nothing. And boom, we had lower prices for consumers. It led to a boom. People started getting two and three phones in their home before they might have only had one. People actually were spending more on telecommunications over time because it was easier to use. Lucent technology started developing also. Just lots and lots of cool stuff came out of the breakup of AT&T. And people who held stock in AT&T before it got broke up saw that stock, which now became the stock of the various baby bells, actually increase in value. So there was an increase in shareholder value as well. So there were benefits that came out of it. Davin in Kansas City's on the line. Hey, Davin.
Yep.
There you
right.
go. Yeah.
What you're just talking about the group in Ukraine and Georgia. What's their name?
Well, they had a different name in each country that they did it. I wrote an op-ed piece about this for Common Dreams, and it describes the whole thing. And if you go to TomHartman.com and click on Articles on Democracy,
uh-huh.
It's like the sixth or seventh article down from the top, and I don't remember the title of the article, but it's pretty obvious that it's the one about how to take back.
Is there any links or anything? Or any...
Pardon?
Are there any links or anything?
Well, once in that article, I give the names and the slogans and the logos that they used, and you can just Google those things, and you can find the whole thing, the whole story's out.
Right on. Very nice.
Yeah, it's all laid out in that article. Okay?
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay, good to talk to you. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8892. Oh, ignore line 2. Yeah, well, we'll move along here. 14 of the 20 largest commercial banks in the world today are European. We're back here now to the tragedy of conservative economics in the United States. What has happened? Of the 20 most developed countries in the world, the U.S. was dead last in the growth rate of total compensation to its workforce in the 1980s. The clear consequence of Reaganomics. In the 1990s, the U.S. average compensation growth rate grew only slightly at an annual rate of 0.1%. Yet Americans work longer hours per year than any other industrialized country and get less vacation time. This is from this article by Michael Ventura. America is definitely not number one. 14 of the 20 largest commercial banks, I mentioned that. In the chemical industry, the European company BASF is the world's leader. Three of the top six players are European. Women are 70% more likely to die in childbirth in the United States than in Europe. There's some truly startling factoids in this thing. U.S. childhood poverty now ranks 22nd, or second to last, among the developed nations. Second to last. Only Mexico scores lower. Have you been to Mexico lately? Does it look developed to you? Yet it's the only developed country to score lower in childhood poverty than the United States across the world. Number 41 in infant mortality rate. Cuba scores higher than we do. The U.S. has lost 1.3 million jobs to China in the last 10 years. We have to take this country back. We have to roll back these absolutely insane trade policies and economic policies that are leading to the ruin of our nation, the destruction of the middle class, and the rise of a new aristocracy among multinational corporations taking over government for their own purposes. It's time to make that change. And soon. Register to vote.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-